Okay, we're going to take a trip up to Quinnipiac University and welcome Lynn Bushnell, a personal friend, but she's also, of course, vice president and has been for public affairs at Quinnipiac University in Hamden, Connecticut. Lynn, you're very welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Adrian. Always nice to hear from you.
Now, okay, let's start off maybe by dispelling rumors. Rumors have it that that Ireland's Great Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac University is closing. It's gone out of business. It's you know how rumors are. They last longer, particularly if it has to do with negativity. Now, straighten it out for us. Is the museum closing?
Yep. The museum is not closing. To steal a phrase from our Connecticut buddy Samuel Longhorn Clemens, reports of its demise are greatly exaggerated. I'm very happy to report that. We are undertaking an ambitious fundraising plan to help make it the museum more self-sufficient, but Quinnipiac, of course, has committed a great deal of resources to it in the past and will continue to do so. But having said that, of course, we do want to start more fundraising over the coming years. And to do that, of course, we started a membership program. And memberships can be as small as an individual membership for $35 or a family for $50, all the way up to the patron and legacy circle levels of $2,500 and $5,000. But I can come back to that in a little bit. We're just so excited to have the collection coming home this week, this coming week, and to have the museum back and operating. That I'd love to talk about that for a little bit too.
Would love if you do. But first of all, can you just tell us about what was the first ever? And it was the Art and the Great Hunger, the coming home. Can you just, tell us about the collection, it's going to Ireland and doing the rounds there.
Sure. Last March, we took virtually the entire collection over to Ireland for a full year. And so it first visited Dublin Castle, and then moved on during the summer to the West Cork Arts Centre in Skibbereen, which, as so many people know, is really ground zero for the Great Famine. And after that, it went north to Derry, to the Culture Lawn, and that was incredibly successful. Each different venue had its own flavor, which was very important, and certainly in Dublin, you know, the theme was shadows of power and colonization. And then when it went to Cork, West Cork, it was reflected more on the migration and the leaving. And finally in Derry, there was more of a sense of the common tragedy of bringing communities together. And one thing that we found really interesting was that in all of this, it was an opportunity to provoke conversations about famine and social injustices all around the world. We saw more than 110,000 people actually see the exhibition over there, which was, it just blew us away. We had no idea that there would be that much interest. We had hoped for maybe 40,000, so for more than double the number of people from all over the world to see it was really remarkable.
The interest level in Ireland, and by the way, there's more than 110,000 visitors, kind of speaks for itself. But there were many more who actually weren't half counted in the sense that many of them had actually, some people had stopped in just to get a flavor of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, the exhibition coming from Quinnipiac University. Let me ask you, Lynn, and I would think that we should spell out a little bit more, and giving credit where credit is due, the overheads alone, the overheads at Ireland's Great Hunger Museum in Quinnipiac, at Quinnipiac University, they're intact. The university not walking away from the massive overheads that you have there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, you're certainly right. The overhead itself is a full, there's a full administrative structure, not just the people at the museum, but of course all of us at the university, whether we're in a billing department or a development and gift operating department, the usual things that people think about with overhead are
and
lighting and snow plowing and all those things that we enjoy here in Connecticut. But on top of that, of course, there's a whole infrastructure that oversees our operations. So Quinnipiac is fully committed to doing all of that into the future.
It was, and as I say, what, and most museums at every level need to, need to have participants, need to have members who really are committed. And again, the cost is minimal. That should not discourage any of our listeners, indeed, who may have access to, or most large corporations have the ability to support tax-free organizations through the, what's known as the 501c3.
Yes.
And I think, my God, as we look across corporate America and see, the tremendous number of Irish who have climbed the ladder in corporate America, that's not a bad place to, for those who know about and who are aware of, the corporate tax deductions. I think that's probably a place where you can get, or where we should encourage and get the money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we certainly are doing that. We have had corporate sponsorships already at the museum, and those tend to be more gifts where you can name something for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
It may be supporting a collection. And those, for example, we just had finished a collection of Civil War prints that TD Bank supported. And that was very helpful to us. The memberships tend to go for some of the extra things that we might not be able to provide otherwise, whether it's lectures or conservation activities.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of educational programming, not only for our own students, but also for middle school and high school students. And it's really touching when you see them come in, 10, 11-year-old kids who are so respectful of the art and really taken away with the story of what it means to have to leave your home, your homeland, sometimes your parents, your grandparents, sometimes even siblings. And many of the kids, we are near New Haven, many of the kids that come into the museum are immigrants themselves. And we have a little program that we run with the younger children talking about packing their suitcase. and what it would, what they would take in their suitcase if they had to leave their home forever. And it's really touching. And I would encourage people to come and see some of the materials that those students leave behind.
Also, that's good that the museum is open from Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursdays 10 to 7 p.m., Fridays and Saturdays 10 to 5, and Sundays 1 to 5 p.m. For children, for students, it's great and it's worth the visit. Now, there are so many individuals, couples, families that show up. You don't need an appointment unless you have a larger group, in which case you can actually arrange to have a tour. It would appear that this is the convenience of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum is amazing. You get off the highway, you're there on Whitney Avenue.
Yes, it's about it's probably an hour and a half to a 2 hour drive in traffic from New York, from Manhattan. And it's a little bit longer from Boston, 2.5 hours maybe. But it's a great day trip. And we have a wonderful Irish restaurant nearby, also on Whitney Avenue, the mm-hmm. Playwright. So many people will plan bus tours that bring you up, show you the museum, go to the Playwright or one of the other Irish American restaurants that we have nearby, and then zip you home all in the day. And it's a very doable trip, and the museum is of a size so that it's not overwhelming. I mean, it's really two and a half galleries, and it's something that you can visit for an hour and a half or 2 hours
mm-hmm.
and feel that you've, you know, had a good, thorough understanding of what you've been looking at.
Can you tell us a little bit about the actual exhibition and also you have some new art pieces now that of course the permanent collection is returning, which is a couple of add-ons there as well.
We do.
And of course Ryan Mahoney is and he is in charge of day-to-day operations.
Yes.
There.
Ryan is our completely dedicated executive director of the museum, and he has been just phenomenal in getting the collection back into the country and getting it hung, and everything is just about ready for our big opening on April 11, this coming Thursday.
Mm-hmm. And again, I know there are a few spaces left for Thursday evening's reception, and also
yes, which is from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
We are just about tapped out, but of course we would love to have people come and visit it after April 11 as well. So
yes,
please feel free to reach out to Ryan Mahoney at qu.edu. Or to me, lynn.bushnell@qu.edu. We would love to have you join us, and especially if you want a tour or something,
right,
with a larger group, that would be Ryan to do.
Now, it was the tour to Ireland, a huge success.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was a great opportunity for people in Ireland. And I think that a lot of the feedback that you have been getting, and indeed the very positive press coverage that the exhibition warranted, was much more than expected. But the tourists from around the world may have reacted as they examined and discussed the issues around the great hunger. For many, of course, it triggered both anger and sadness. And again, as we have acknowledged, and I think most people, immigrants from Ireland, would acknowledge that there was little told Ireland's great hunger, the famine of 1845 to 1852, was now the kind of household topic. There was the survivor guilt, and there were a great number of people who would prefer by far to forget about the famine and to forget about the great hunger.
That's true, and that is actually how the museum got started back in 1997. Well, that's how the collection got started.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1997, then President John Leahy was named Grand Marshal for the New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade. And he had a good friendship with Murray Lender, who of Lender's Bagels, who was one mm-hmm. of our alumni. And when you are Grand Marshal, you make somewhere between 100 and 200 stump speeches from January to March. And so because it was 1997 and it was the 150th anniversary of the worst year of the famine, John used that as an educational opportunity to teach people what had happened. He is a professor, after all.
Mm-hmm.
And Murray heard him tell the story, and Murray was just shocked. Murray grew up in New Haven. His parents were Polish immigrants, and he knew the story in his own words. He said, "I know the story of the Jews. I know the story of the Italians, but I've never heard the story of the Irish." And those are the three major populations in Greater New Haven at the time. So Murray eventually said to John, "I want you to continue to tell this story." And so that's how the first collection started in the Lender family collection room in our library. Eventually, the collection outgrew that, and we built the museum on Whitney Avenue, which is also much more accessible to the public. And that opened in 2012. And actually, your now Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, came and opened the museum that year. So we're very fortunate and honored to have had him here before he became Taoiseach.
You have an audio, you've added an audio tour system as well.
We do. That was one of the benefits of taking the collection to Ireland, was that we now do have audio tours available. That was a gift from a number of people that allowed us to do that. And the art itself is really stunning. The one piece that I think everyone... that appeals to everyone is a Robert Balla piece.
Yeah.
It's a stained glass piece, and it's very bright and beautiful, but it shows the stark contrast of the potato plant itself before the blight hit and then after the blight hit. But we also have some new pieces. We have one
mm-hmm.
that I'm really excited about called the Basking Shark. It's a piece by Dorothy Cross, and it is an upside boat with a shark skin on it. And my description doesn't do it justice, but it does raise the question of how could people starve when they were surrounded by water, and why couldn't they fish? And, you know, there are so many layers and complexities in these stories that it's difficult to tell all in one time.
The co-educational non-sectarian institution of Quinnipiac University indeed enrolled, well, the latest figures we have, 6,784 full-time undergraduates and 2,900 graduate and part-time students in the 100-degree program throughout the School of Business, Communications, Education, Engineering, Health Sciences, Law, Medicine, Nursing, and College of Arts in the U.S. And I probably left out some...
I think you got most of them. We loosely say we have about 10,000 students now.
Mm-hmm.
7,000 are undergraduate and about 3,000 graduate students. And that does include our newest schools of medicine and engineering. And we're a very robust place here, to be sure.
Yeah, and it doesn't do any harm, to remind people that when Quinnipiac University opened, it was considered to be a small local university, and over the tenure of John Leahy there, was there for 31 years, it grew, and it is, for instance, it is among the America's best colleges, and Quinnipiac is recognized, by the way, by Princeton's Review as the best colleges to work for. Now, you know a little bit something about that. It has.
Well, that's true. I have I have quite a bit of experience with that. I'm actually celebrating my 25th year at Quinnipiac.
Oh.
It's been a wonderful, wonderful ride. It's been a privilege to work for two presidents here. You mentioned John Leahy, who was my longtime employer. But we now have a new president, Judy Olian, who joins us from UCLA, Anderson School of Business. She's an impressive person, and she has already dug in and helped with the fundraising. She's met with the Irish government. She's met with a major philanthropist down in Palm Beach, and we're very hopeful that we will get this whole campaign up and flourishing in the coming months.
She's also a great supporter and takes great pride in Quinnipiac's Irish Great Hunger Institute, which is the founding director there, Christine Keneally, has done such an amazing job and it continues to grow.
It does. It sure does. And actually, Christine Keneally, who is the director of the Institute, which is more of an academic arm of our efforts, and Ryan Mahoney, who is director of the museum, they are collaborating on a project that we'll talk about a little bit later this spring. Each year, every 2 years, Strokestown Park and the Institute form a famine walk from Strokestown to Dublin, which recreates the walk that people had to take from Strokestown to Dublin to get on the ships to emigrate to America or Canada. And so this year we are going to try and recreate that here in Hamden as well. We have something called the Farmington Canal Trail. And we will be certainly not walking the same distance from Strokestown to Dublin, but we will probably do the equivalent of a 5K along the Farmington Canal. And that will be used, there will be some modest entry fee, and that will be used to raise funds for both the Institute and the museum. And it's just another example of the great collaboration that we have between the two arms of this effort.
Lynn Bushnell, again, I think it is the message should go out that yes, the museum would be open. What's different is that now we have an opportunity, and in fact the caveat both with respect to having that museum guaranteed into the future, and it's not that big a commitment, is to make sure that those who will recognize that this collection is the largest collection of art and artifacts pertaining to the famine in the entire world.
Yes.
So it's I think it behooves most of us to start small, and for $35 or $50 for a family, it's a great deal. And it is indeed at this point, not only does it show the appreciation for the collection in the first place, but yes, we're called upon now to pitch in, become a member, and you can get that information. Lynn, correct me if I'm if you've got a better website, but I know that ighm.org will get you to, and you can get the information there. But it's also on our website, irishradio.com. If you log on to our website, we will connect you. Okay, the telephone number, Lynn?
Is 203-582-8651 is my personal phone number. And let me look for the phone number for the museum itself. I believe it's
5203-582-6500.
Yes. 6500,
yes. That is terrific. Yep. Okay. Again, thanks for the great news for dispelling the rumors. And yes, it's uncomfortable to think that that the University of Quinnipiac University and Ireland's Great Hunger Museum would in fact just be shut down. Rotten rumor, but yes, to ensure the future of that of the museum.
Sure.
Yeah, membership is again very necessary. IGHM .org friends. And if you would like to get in touch with Ryan Mahoney, or for that matter, as the director, or any staff member at Ireland's Great Hunger Museum for hours for information. And by the way, you have a terrific website, which gives a lot of information. But the telephone number again is 203-582-6500, and Lynn, we look forward to being with you on Thursday evening there. It's
great.
We will be delighted, much as we were proud of having practically the entire collection in Ireland again, in Dublin and Skibbereen in Derry. We're delighted to have it back. Look
it's
forward
great
to seeing.
To have it back.
Okay.
It's really terrific. And thank you very much for talking with me this morning.
Well, always a pleasure. Okay. Then
all right. I'll see you Thursday.
Yes, indeed. Okay. I just want to, again, friends, remind you that if you would like to be there for the grand reopening, it's this Thursday evening. Now, you have to, Ryan Mahoney or any member of the staff there, if you would like to join us on this Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. The museum is on Whitney Avenue, 3011, 3011 Whitney Avenue, where, and there you'll find the world's largest collection of visual art, of artifacts and printed materials relating to the Irish famine. And the museum, yes, it preserves and it builds and presents its art collection in order to stimulate reflection, inspire imagination, and advance awareness of Ireland's great hunger. And it's long aftermath indeed on both sides of the Atlantic. Okay,